Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Land of hope and glory, fishing's really important. Nothing's bigger than fishing. Fishing, I can't emphasize it enough. It's a sovereignty pod, Phil. How do you feel?
Even though we're now a services-based economy, people still think we make guns. well, yes, listener, you might have noticed that Pierre and I are sounding particularly free today.
Yes. I don't know if you can hear the sovereignty that drips from every syllable that passes our sweet lips, but...
This is the first Bud Pod in a free United Kingdom, free from the chains of a tyrannical European Union, free at last to do what we want to do.
Yeah.
And we want to drown in the Atlantic.
I think what we want to do before we drown is to spend possibly as long as 7 years very slowly negotiating a more difficult way of doing things.
We're going to spend 7 years to find a more difficult way of doing as close a thing as possible to what we were doing beforehand.
Yes.
That's the ideal. The ideal is that
we
spend years and years of time and effort and billions of pounds to renegotiate a deal we already had for free.
Yes. And the things that we're getting in exchange for that are it's harder to move here, is the theory. We want it to be harder to move here for people from Europe. Because it's already fucking hard to move here from not Europe.
Right. And we want to make it equally hard for Europe.
Yes. We want it to be as difficult to move here from France as it is from South Africa or Malaysia for either of us. Or, you know, just Ghana, Brazil. Anyway, just everyone is just drowning in forms and treated with great suspicion. That's the dream.
It's all... I think Brexit is all one... big hoax invented by the paper industry to sell more forms.
Yes, they're in the pocket of big form. Did you watch any of the sad European Parliament stuff?
No, I couldn't really bring myself to. On the day that, on the last European Parliament day for the British, I watched a little clip of everyone singing "Auld Lang Syne."
Mm.
But I didn't want to give Brexiteers the satisfaction of my paying attention.
Interesting.
You know what I mean?
Interesting. What, like the idea?
You know when like in a movie, a gal breaks up with a boyfriend and she starts crying, and the other gal's like, "He's not worth it."
Oh yeah, yeah.
Hey, come on, we're going out.
Right.
You know, that's how I felt about
you.
We're going out. I said that to myself. We're going out tonight.
You're trying to.
We're getting fucked. Woo!
You were trying to sass your way out of Brexit grief.
Yeah, and it kind of worked, actually.
Did it?
Well, I think that's what the country did as a whole. I mean, it was extraordinary the lack of interest that official Brexit Day passed with, considering all the drama that's come to that led up
yeah.
to it.
Yes, and
that's a great British strength, is to really care about something during it, and then once it is a bygone conclusion, everyone goes, "Nah, and you move
that's,
on."
That's true, isn't it? I watched some of the parliamentary speeches and things, and it's a sign of how insane everything's gotten, where it's like the EU, a lot of the stuff about the EU is not nice.
Yeah.
Like, it has loads of issues, and a lot of the people at the highest level of it are like completely out of touch, weird continental academics. Like, they've often done that really Germanic thing of getting 9 degrees in philosophy from 8 different universities. It's like Professor whoever of Leipzig, and they're just completely like, well, if the Greeks wanted food, they sort of invested in the 70s or whatever. They're very, you know, like, but then the fact that that's the case, I was watching it going, oh, the beautiful community of the... That's how crazy things have gotten, is that it was like watching the sad bit of a film where like the heroes are getting cast out of the halls of greatness or whatever.
I mean, like, it's sort of like a bit in like a Marvel film where a sort of anti-hero-like villain dies and you go, oh, actually, they were pretty good.
Oh, I liked... version of Deadpool or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, I was very sad watching it, and then I watched, did you see any of the interviews with Sovereign Patriots in Trafalgar Square?
No, but I did see some news pieces, like reports from the Brexit centres around the world, around the UK.
Yes.
So like, I think there was one in Dover or whatever, and I was trying to give Brexiteers the benefit of the doubt and go, you know what, no, they're not scum guzzling morons. They just have a different view of nationhood and society than I do. And literally the first person this reporter went up to saying, oh, how do you feel today? And this stupid woman just went, oh, I feel English, you know, I feel, she's doing that sort of shoulder drop, like, she just had a lovely shout. I just feel English. And then they cut to another interview with a horrible little troll.
Yeah.
And they're like, how do you feel today? Oh, I'm happy. Oh, because, you know, they were... And she literally said, they were telling us what shape to grow our fruit in. They were telling us this and telling us that. And it's just good to be, you know... British again. And then after seeing those, it was like, no, I was right. They're all scum, guzzling morons. And we've done this for the worst elements of our society. We have shot ourselves in the foot to spite the ugliest faces.
I find it quite funny, the idea that you have one of these big rallies and you've got some like incredibly academic Brexiteer. You know, they're sat there going like... yeah, so the reason is that, you know, if you look at the Maastricht Treaty, the way that it treats the concept of the nation state, you know, the trouble is... And they've got these really, like, completely philosophically coherent and extremely complex reasons for not liking the EU's, like, constitutional points. And then they stood next to someone going, if I want to grow a banana in a straight line... And they're having to go... Yes, we all have the right idea. They're all having to sort of agree with each other, even though they find each other completely baffling.
Yeah, I guess
it has... I saw the ones in Trafalgar Square where the BBC reporter said to the woman, but what are you looking forward to changing about your life day to day? And she was like, well, you know, we can have our own laws, can't we? It's like, right, okay. And I've said that faster and better than... I recommend finding that clip. It's chilling.
What do you mean chilling? She just doesn't get to the point.
There's nothing. It's nothing going to change day to day for this woman. She doesn't run a small bottling company.
Yeah.
Or whatever. It's not like, well, the importation of glass may be more or less difficult, depending. It's like, no, she's just there going, hello, I hate the idea of foreign things. I mean...
Yeah, I mean, you have to give it to Nigel... Farage, that he has mobilized the most significant change in British foreign policy.
Yeah,
on the back of a hunch.
Since like the 50s.
But it's just a hunch. He's just gone,
yeah.
He's like, hey everyone, you know this hunch you have? And everyone's gone, not really, okay. And then he went, all right, well now you have this hunch. And it was like, oh yeah, I guess we have a hunch.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
But you use that hunch to completely paralyze British politics for a decade.
Yes. And to change it, everything. I mean, he's probably the most successful
politician
of the 21st century so far in the UK.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's just achieved a dream without ever being in Parliament. He's never even been an MP.
Mm.
He's just sat there going, I like smoking fags in pubs. And everyone's gone, oh, well, I mean, how can we resist?
You can't argue with that.
How can we resist the tidal wave of this man's message? I don't know. It's... I was surprised. I was reminded the other day. It's easy to forget, Phil, because we live in. We're members of the metropolitan liberal elite who live in London.
Yes, as everyone should be. I mean, that's the point, isn't it? Everyone should be.
Yeah. Well, you know, the dream. But now we're all going to be turned into crofters and noble hooksmen. and things like that.
Yes, but it'll be good to finally learn a trade.
It will be. It will be actually very satisfying to learn a trade. But I'd forgotten the kind of attitudes that I grew up around, to an extent. And a guy who I went to school with, who I haven't seen in many years, some of my friends saw him the other day, and he was disparaging about the idea of picking up food from a French supermarket on a trip. Like, he wanted to pick up the food from a British supermarket.
In France?
They were going to go through France, yeah.
Right.
And they were like, well, why don't we just wait till we're in France and we can just buy stuff there?
Oh, I see.
And he was like, no. He was very like, oh, no, it will taste of foreign gubbins.
Right, so it wasn't that he wanted to avoid supporting a French economy over a British economy. It's just he was scared of what it
was. He was like afraid. He was fearful and disgusted on instinct basis of what might be in a French supermarket. You know, the country that's arguably one of the best food making countries on earth, and the word cuisine is French. You know? Like, Michelin stars are French and so on. And he was like a fearful peasant of the idea of just buying whatever Le Jaffa cakes instead of fucking Jaffa cakes. But that was genuinely, it was enough for him to be like, I'd rather carry bags of food.
To be fair to me, European crisps are scary. Well, when you go in Europe and they're like...
It's like leek and onion.
Yeah, those flavors are insane.
Paprika everywhere.
Paprika.
I like that, though. I like paprika.
I like a paprika crisp. What did I have? Oh, jamón ibérico.
What? Crisps?
We were in Porto on the weekend because I'm part of the elite. And the crisps they had, we got bags of jamón ibérico crisps. They're just like that. A very expensive, fine Spanish ham. Is that a particular ham to flavor the crisp?
It'd be so interesting to see how much that just tastes like smoky bacon.
It's just a bag of Frazzles.
Exactly. It's the same flavor powder from the industrial hopper. But they're like, why don't we just call it the jamón ibérico for the English market? Like, no, they don't like nice things. They want the smoke and the bacon, the cheap bacon.
We'll make up a new word. Frazzles? Frazzles.
What is the noise of when the English, they put the spam in the hot pan?
Frazzles.
Frazzles. We call it this. It will remind them of the low-quality pork that they enjoy so much.
Frazzles. We make an onomatopoeic crisp. Frazzles. You know Michelin?
Yeah.
The Michelin star? It is the same Michelin as the Michelin man.
It is the tire company, isn't it?
Yeah, because they back when the car was in, around the time the car was invented, the motoring started becoming a thing.
Mm.
The Michelin people wanted to encourage people to drive. So they came up with a Michelin guide, which was sort of a guide of restaurants and stuff and hotels around the country for motorists to stop by.
Right.
And
so they were like, this is a good one, drive here.
Yeah, and they started rating restaurants and stuff. And then over the years, it became the...
Titan.
The Titan that it is now.
I
think it's so funny that the two places you see the big fat white Michelin man are at the best restaurants in the world and garages.
Yes. Yeah. That is like a stereotype of a rich guy, isn't it? He's all big and fat and white. And he just loves cars and food, like an oligarch.
But not just any food. Tiny plates of tiny, itty-bitty food. All in one spoon.
Yeah, of like beach smoke-cured halibut with a sort of a drizzle of something.
Yeah,
and he still eats enough of it to be that fat. That's what's really rich about him. I don't understand why Michelin stars, like even like understanding the history of it, that used to be this guide, where it's like, it's the seventh best restaurant on earth. It has one Michelin star. You're like, what?
Oh, right, yeah.
So in the old days, was it like the classic 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 stars? And they've just deflated. There's been a deflation of stars.
You can get up to 3. 3 is the most you can
three
get.
3 is the most you can get. Was that always the case, do you think? Have they just gone, we're handing these out like sweets?
I don't know.
No one's going to motor their way to these restaurants if we keep saying that fucking Denny's or whatever is worth 2 stars. No.
I don't know.
How many Michelin... stars would you give Bud Pod?
Let's see. Let's rate Bud Pod on various different categories. So
I think if taste, if bad pod was a real, because
I think the smell is pretty bad.
Yeah, but it's like what's that fruit that smells like vomit, but it's like a delicacy.
Which one in Malaysia?
Yeah,
durian.
Durian, yeah. We're like durian fruit.
Right. Yeah, it's like, very stinky, but tastes delicious.
Yeah.
Creamy.
I think if Bud Pod was a restaurant, it would be like one of those restaurants where they go, the fare is very traditional and basic, but it's done with such skill.
Yeah.
Because we're not trying to do anything complicated. This isn't a souffle.
No.
It's like, look, it's roast potatoes, you know.
It's just a full potato.
Yeah.
But it's the real essence of potato.
They've really nailed it.
Yeah.
I think so. I like to think so.
Now, we here at the BBC are very concerned with balance. We are dedicated to providing a balanced a range of opinions. And so we have here with us a stupid Remainer.
Yes, hello.
Hello.
Hi. I voted Remain. Just, I don't like the North, so when they say that something's made them poor, I think good, because I don't like you, I don't think you deserve things, because you speak English incorrectly. And I just vaguely, you know, I prefer foreign food to the food we have here, just generally, and that makes me, you know, I vote along those lines about how much I dislike maybe Sunday roast.
And I hear that before the 2016 referendum, you did not know what the EU was. Is that correct?
Yeah, no, I thought it was like a passport thing. Like, you know, like just like a way of saving time for hollybobs. It's a word I use.
That's right, so you do say hollybobs
as
well. You really are thick.
Twee as well.
Wow, okay, that's really awful.
Because I've noticed that the levers are twee in a way that's like sort of a porcelain bulldog.
Yes.
Whereas I'm twee in like a sort of a homemade bobble hat.
Right, yes, that is awfully twee and irritating.
Mm.
I understand that after the day of the referendum, you liked a post on social media, which was sort of a photograph of wine and cheese and pâtés on one end of a table, and then sort of baked beans and moldy bread on the other end.
And spam or something, wasn't it?
And spam.
Yeah.
And there was a big chasm between them. And the post said, this is what we've done. And you liked that, and you thought it was very insightful.
Yes, I actually sent it to several of the tedious WhatsApp groups I'm a member of.
Fantastic.
Yeah, including the Poetry Society one.
Well, okay, that is really awful. And you are thick. Thank you very much
for
joining us.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Oh, so on my birthday day, I went to a Michelin star restaurant because it's my 30th. I'll treat myself.
Yeah.
And also my sister ended up getting it for me for my birthday. It's very nice. Thank you, sister. So I went to my sister. Well, and I got there first. Arrived.
Out of breath. running.
Yeah, I was just so excited.
Yeah.
And I got there first, and then my sister arrived. And I was at the table already, and she came over, and she said, happy birthday, and she gave me a little hug. And sat down. And then the sort of maitre d' came over and said, madam, good evening, thank you for joining us. And sir, I do believe it's your birthday today. And I was like, huh? What? How do you know that?
He was going to kill you.
And he just went, oh, a little bird told me. And he wasn't English, he was Italian, so I don't know how he says that. Oh, a little bird told me. And I was like, oh, okay, right. I don't know. And we started getting served the dishes, and it's like a tasting menu, so it's like loads of little dishes.
Yeah.
And each one is presented by a different chef from the kitchen who comes over and tells you
all about. A different chef?
Yeah.
That sounds exhausting.
And
very Willy Wonka.
Yeah, it was really wonderful, actually. And one of the, like the third dish or something was brought over by this really nice cook who, like, gave us the dish and explained it and threw in a couple of jokes.
Oh yeah.
And I was like, And then she said, to me, I'm a big fan, by the way. I've been watching you for a while, and I was like, oh wow, thanks. And I realized I should have laughed more at her jokes.
Oh, there you go.
But now she's gonna think I'm a real diva.
He doesn't like other jokes, just his own.
And then when she went away, my sister's like, oh, that's how they know then that it was your birthday. She must have seen your name on the reservation list and go, oh, I wonder why he's coming. And then my birthday is on my Wikipedia. So she went, oh, it's his birthday. And then she told everyone, blah, blah, blah. I was like, yeah, maybe that's it. It seems a bit much still.
Yeah.
And I'm still racking my brain throughout the dinner how they know it's my birthday. I said to the guy, can I ask how you know my birthday? It's my birthday. And he goes, I don't know. Maybe someone. Oh, we have our ways.
So he'd rather imply that he's a spy.
Yeah.
And just fucking tell you.
Every good maitre d' should imply that they are a spy and could kill you. I think you want to be there at that level of fear.
Yeah, because he's right in a way to keep the secrets of maitre d'ing away from you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he wants to ruin the spell.
Yeah, he wants it to be like Grand Budapest Hotel or something where it's like, flowers? But I didn't even realize I wanted them. Anticipating the guest's needs.
You know? And then I remembered, oh, my friend Holly today was texting me saying, hope you enjoy dinner. And she's very, very nice. And so maybe she called ahead to say, hey, my friend's coming over. It's his birthday. Please make him feel. And I was like, oh, secrets. That must be it. And then we got to the end of the dinner. And as we were getting our coats on, getting ready to go, I just say one more time to maitre d', like, so how did you know it was my birthday? And he said, oh, when your sister came in and gave you a hug, she said, happy birthday.
The easiest way is always the way.
And this after they gave me like a letter from the restaurant, from the chef, saying we would all here like to wish you a happy birthday, and it was signed by the chef and everything. I was like, how do they know? how have they had time to write this up and print it?
They've got this big filing cabinet full of happy birthday cards. That's amazing, but that's great. That's like a good murder mystery.
Yeah.
It's always like, no, it was a knife.
And also everything you need to know is right at the beginning.
Yeah. Exactly. It was all there. You could have figured it out.
Yeah.
But you overcomplicated it. You were thinking, what if there was a satellite that tracked me from the day of my birth?
Also, there's a really fun bit of the dinner where so a few of the courses came with a wine pairing. Oh. And the maitre d' brought out one. He said he told each one we were told exactly what the drink was, and this one he came out and said with two glasses, he said this one I'm gonna let you try and figure out, it's a surprise, see if you can figure out what this is. And I was like, yes, challenge accepted.
So this is your wine dream.
Yeah, this is my wine dream. It was the best birthday ever.
Yeah.
And so I was sniffing it, and like tasting like, God, I know that taste from somewhere. Where's that from? My sister's just like, sorry, where are you? And I'm just, and then I realized, oh, that smell, that taste, I think it's not like a sake I've had before, but there's an element there that's definitely sake. That's of a ricey sort of alcohol taste.
Uh-huh.
And then I went to the maitre d'. I was like, excuse me. I think
a little bird told me.
A little bird told me that this is sake. And he sort of whacked his head back and went, oh, well done. Like and a then, cartoon of a
maitre d'. And your dick just exploded.
I was so happy. Like, oh, well done. Let me get you the bottle. And he went over and got the bottle and brought it over. I'd won a prize. He's like, he told us all about this sake. And then my sister was like, you know, he probably just does that for any guess. Any guess is correct. And like back there, he has his cabinet just full of different bottles. There's like a Pepsi bottle.
Yeah.
A water bottle.
Apricot juice.
I think, yes, it is.
It's right at the end of the cellar, though, so it'll take me 10 minutes to go and buy
just some. Hard cut to him outside the restaurant running to Sainsbury's.
But also, like, and then running from Sainsbury's to an off-license run by... Like an Asian guy.
Yeah, because you're not going to get apricot juice.
Sainsbury's. No, you're going to have to go to the weird food and wine.
Foreign food and wine.
Yeah, and they'll be like, "Well, what brand?
If you want, what need... size of apricot?
Exactly. What breed? What species? Yes, that's great though. That's what you want a maitre d' to tell you is well done on something.
Well
like
done.
That. That's. that's what you want, is to be to impress a historically unimpressible man.
To impress a cartoon villain.
Yes, yes. To impress someone who is trying to foil the schemes of a sort of talking dog and his owner. It's always a sort of cruel maitre d'.
Yeah.
I don't know where...
Black moustache.
Yeah. It's always, I don't know where the writers of these American adventure silly films got such a bad experience with fine dining from. I don't know where this grudge started. I'm trying to think what my equivalent of that would be for wine and a maitre d' saying well done.
Or like what would make you really satisfied and make your dick explode?
Yeah. Or be just be such an on-brand thrill.
Probably correcting correcting a very highly respected historian on the detail.
Ooh.
That would probably be good.
Only, no, not correcting, because then that's like I'm beating them.
Right.
And I don't need to beat them. Maybe if I said something and they're like, yes, exactly. Or they're like, oh, yes, that's an interesting thought.
All right. I've maybe that's it. That that's, yeah.
Yeah, maybe that would be it. Actually, when I went on...
David Saki.
No.
The prominent racist historian, David Saki.
Maybe
you could turn him good.
I'll just say, I think everyone's... All races are equal. He'll go, Like, no one ever actually just said it to him directly. They all just assumed he'd heard it and discounted
it. He's waiting for someone else to say it. Oh, well, I mean, if you say so.
Oh, interesting.
I guess that's an interesting point.
Actually, I've thought of it. I've thought of what it was. It's happened.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I've remembered. For my brother-in-law is he's from the north of England, but his family's like Polish.
Okay.
So for his stag do, and he was marrying my older sister, we went to Krakow.
Oh yeah. Is it Krakow or Krakow?
Krakow in terms of like how you'd read it if you were in Poland.
Right.
Like so if you said Krakow, they'd go ma.
Okay. Ma.
Yeah.
Huh? Ma.
Huh? Ma? Krakow. Krakow. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I guess I'm being unfair because I say Krakow, but I don't say Warszawa.
What's Warszawa?
Warsaw.
Oh.
Yeah.
Warszawa.
Warszawa.
That's what's much sexier than Warsaw.
Warsaw.
Warsaw must be the most badass name, though. It's got war and saw in
war
it.
War and saw. Yeah, Warsaw.
Warsaw.
The Warsaw.
Bring the Warsaw.
Bring forward the Warsaw. Sir, the gates, they're holding. Bring in the Warsaw.
That's a really funny siege weapon. Just a big saw.
Yeah. Vrr, just going in.
It's like a handsaw. Just a small handsaw. Bring the Warsaw!
It takes forever to win a duel with a Warsaw.
Just taking down the walls.
Slowly saw off your enemy's head. It's very difficult to win.
Stand still!
Stop fidgeting! So we're in Krakow.
Yeah.
Or near Krakow at this point. And we went to a shooting range.
Nice!
Yeah, and it's Poland, so it's like...
War guns.
We went to war gun.
Yeah.
And it was really good because you could get like AK-47s and Uzis and all kinds of crazy shit. And there's like a generic package you can pay for where they just go, you start with like pistols and move your way up to an AK.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, it was great. And it was Poland, so it was like, I was like, what if I want to shoot more than just like, it was like 20, it was like one magazine or like one, you know, load per weapon.
Uh-huh.
So it wasn't like a lot. And I was like, what if I want to shoot two magazines for the AK-47. And the guy went, well, you have to pay extra money. And I said, how much? And it was like £2. It was so, I was like, yeah, yes. Well, yeah. Keep it coming. Leave the bottle of bullets. But I was the only person in the stag with any kind of range time.
Range time?
Like time spent on a shooting range.
Oh, I see.
I was the only person who'd ever been trained or, you know, used to using weapons or whatever, even to the minor extent that I've been.
Right.
So I was doing it all like properly, like I was firing in bursts and so on.
Yeah.
And I had to go first because everyone was like, right, you go first. We have no idea what the fuck we're doing. Two guys didn't want to do it.
They were scared?
They were like, no, we're not going to do it.
Wow.
Because they were so loud and like the recoil was so big. They were like, fuck this.
It is scary.
They hated it. I thought I was right in there like a
there's also an amazing amount of trust you're putting into everyone else at the shooting range to not just turn around and go, ah!
Just mow you down. No, the Polish guy running the range was, I'd say, 7 feet tall and wide. He was like a building. He was like a small outbuilding.
Wow.
Enormous.
So he could have taken a few bullets in order to get to
him. He looked like the Kingpin from Spider-Man.
Wow, yeah.
It was like bullets would... No, he would just absorb them and fire them back with the muscle under all the
just
fat.
Just flex once and then they all just pop back out.
Pew! Yeah. No, this dude was an absolute fridge of a man.
Mm.
And he would stand right behind you. So I guess he'd just snap your neck really quickly the second you turned around to go, wow, isn't this cool? With your
Also, it's one at a time.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's okay. One at a time. It was a range. So the rangers had like 6 standing slots.
Yeah,
but there was like 14 of us.
Right.
And also, this English stag do asshole package we've bought.
Right. Yeah.
So he's not like, hey, what? Load up, everyone.
The liability special.
Fuck me. Exactly. Yeah. And you could see him looking at us like the safety briefing was a lot more aggressive.
Yeah.
Than it needed to be, because he was just like, I've seen these guys' trainers. I don't trust them. I don't trust these fucking thugs. I've seen enough Englishmen come here and ruin everything and vomit everywhere.
I've seen what they can do to a small Spanish town unarmed, alone with an AK-47.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think we were probably all very hungover as well by that point. But I was like, who wants to go first? And I was volunteered. You know.
Yeah,
I was right in there. I loved it. And the guy,
what are they called in Hunger Games?
A tribute.
A tribute.
Yeah. Okay. I was self tributing.
Yeah.
Yes, me. It was my Disneyland, and because I was firing in bursts with relative accuracy, like not great, but still pretty good. The guy went, "Oh, you a soldier?" But not in like a nice way.
Are we like, I bet you. Oh, you say that to all.
Yeah, I say that to all the rifle range guests. He didn't say it in a. Are you a soldier?
He wasn't flirting.
He said it in a way that he was worried that he hadn't been told.
Oh.
He said it in a suspicious way.
Like you were a spy?
No. This guy's a professional who runs a rifle range. He'd probably like to be told if there's a bunch of people in the military coming to use the...
Right.
You know, he's been told there's a bunch of assholes on a stag do coming. Right, he didn't say it like it was a problem, but he said it like he was a bit like, what's going on? What is this?
Which must have been the most satisfying.
Yeah, that's way more satisfying.
Yeah.
Oh, if he said it like, you little soldier, and then like he'd rubbed my hair and my balls.
But you know what this sounds like? This story.
Dibby, dibby, dibby. No.
This is what the story sounds like to me is the equivalent of when teenage boys used to say they had sex with a prostitute on the weekend, but she
fell in love with them.
She refused to take payment.
Yeah, she was like, no, this
is the equivalent.
Your 14-year-old dick was
so good.
So fantastic.
I'm willing to waive the one small bit of income I get.
I'm willing to waive the thing that makes this whole ridiculous job worthwhile, just so you can...
That's what the story sounds like.
Yeah,
I went to a rifle range and they thought I was an army.
They thought I was a school sniper from Call of Duty. If any listeners can be bothered, you can scroll far back enough on my Instagram. It's probably like 2 years ago now, and there's a photo of me with the AK by the bullet grouping.
Wow!
So I thought I'm going to put this on Instagram just so people know what a piece of shit I am.
Yeah, like the photo of someone who's just about to get cancelled on social media.
Massively, yeah. That's a photo. If I ever commit any kind of crime, that's the photo straight away. Look at this alt-right thug or whatever. It doesn't look like. It's almost the reason I put it up is out of sheer awareness of how bad it looks in almost any context. But then, two guys didn't want to do it. They were like, no, we're not going to fucking do it, which I found really surprising.
Yeah. The thing is, they're probably scared they'll bloody love it. I was texting you the other day because recently I was filming something which had some fake shooting in it, but they got proper decommissioned guns firing blanks.
Yes.
And I fired this handgun and it felt as it would have felt if it were real.
Yeah.
And I just texted PS straight away going, I just fired a gun. It was the best thing ever. I loved it. It was so good. It felt so good. It felt so powerful. It felt so strong. I got an erection. It felt great. And I was just like, I get now. I understand gun nuts. I understand what.
Totally.
Yeah. Cause it just feels great.
Yeah. It's a lot.
They're gonna use this tape as evidence for some horrible future crime.
Well, in a way, we're balancing it out because we were being liberal Ramonas at the start, and now we're finally, you know, this is the extra bit that balances it out, where we talk about how excellent guns are and how they're brilliant.
But the gun I fired was a Glock, and that's made in Austria. So
So
we're gonna have to pay a lot more for our Glocks now.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot harder to make any of the Glock parts. There's going to be tariffs on them, import-export. But you know what, Phil? What's wrong with a good old-fashioned 38 caliber Webley service revolver? Yeah?
Webley.
Yeah, Webley.
That's such a... I wouldn't want... If I had, my gun was called a Webley, I wouldn't call it... Pass me my Webley.
Webley.
I'd say just pass me my gun.
Pass me the, you know the one I want.
What's that Webley. You got there, a Webley?
We got a Webley.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Oh, good evening, sir. Welcome to Le Mans.
Merci. Thank you. I'm just so glad I could get a reservation.
Oh, yes, well done. Can we also just say happy birthday?
How did you know it was my birthday?
Oh, a little bird told me. Little birds tell me everything. It seems like, oh, your new underpants, they appear to be fitting well.
I do have new underpants, and they are fitting well.
Yes.
But how did you know? I got them for my birthday. Is that how you knew?
Oh, I have my ways. Also, that wouldn't, you know, just me knowing it was your birthday, I wouldn't be able to instantly jump to the conclusion that you bought new underpants. That's not exactly a well-worn
tradition. That's true.
Ah, and may I also congratulate you on Brexit, which I know you voted for in 2016.
Keep your voice down, for God's sake. This is a Central London Michelin-starred restaurant.
Oh, no judgment here, sir. No judgment here. I also hate European people, as you can tell from my Far East accent.
Yeah, yes.
Can I offer you something to drink? Maybe your favorite drink in the world? Coca-Cola mixed with Diet Coke?
My God, the hypocrite!
Half-half, no?
Yes, the hypocrite. That's what I invented it at university because I couldn't drink due to a terrible bowel condition.
Yes, it's an ingenious invention.
Oh, thank
I'll
you.
Get you a bottle of that, a good year as well.
Oh, my God. That's kind of psychic.
Can I take your coat?
Oh, yes. Yes, please.
And don't worry, I won't put it in the cloak room. Don't worry, I won't put it in the cloak room. I'll just take it straight home for you now. I know your address, of course. I'll hang it up where you usually hang it in the wardrobe.
I was quite pleased on the stag do that I was part of the kind of stag do where two or three guys out of 14 could afford socially to not do the shooting.
Yeah, I was going to say, that sounds like quite a nice stag do.
That is a nice stag do, isn't it?
Yeah. That sounds like quite a sweet stag do then. That's a nice balance.
Yeah.
So you're willing to go to a shooting range, but a couple have reservations.
Yeah, a couple That's of ideal. Them feel able to go, I'm afraid of this, or I don't really like the idea of it, you know. Now that I've seen it up close, because it's fucking loud. It's always about 100 times louder than you'd expect. However, to balance that out...
It is so loud. That's why I'm always shocked by whenever I hear a gunfire close by. It's like, oh, how did...
Like, what a loud bang.
People fought wars like this
just
all day? People had this on all day.
Hundreds of those all the time.
God.
No wonder they go deaf and stuff. No wonder
they lose their minds.
Yeah.
Have you seen 1917 yet?
Just saw it the other day.
Isn't it great?
Fantastic.
I love it so much. Did you see an IMAX?
No, but I did see it on quite a pretty big old screen.
Yeah, it's great.
I really enjoyed it. And the stuff in 1917 lined up with the stories that my great-grandfather told my dad.
Okay.
About being in the Somme.
And about there being a director there with... lots of cameras.
With one camera and a big crane swooping across bits of water.
Nice.
The German trenches being all concreted and fancy.
Yeah, like an apartment block.
Yeah, totally. So I'm, you know, told the story is passed down. My great grandfather would say it was always a real pleasure when you did capture a German trench.
Of course.
Because you'd be like, oh, thank God, there's like pumping stations to get rid of the flood water and it's all concrete to this electricity.
They actually laid concrete.
Yeah. And electrical wires and pumps and just, yeah, such amazing. A high standard of engineering.
Maybe they should have won.
Well, they should have thought of that before they started such a stupid bloody war. But
do you think the Allies ever like saw the Germans, like either war, saw their sweet, sweet tanks and their beautiful uniforms and just went, oh, maybe they're right, actually.
They're actually quite smart. I recommend our fellow comedian and stablemate, Al Murray.
Yeah.
Al Murray's podcast with James Holland, We Have Ways of Making You Talk, World War II history podcast.
Ooh.
They analyze the engineering of the tanks. And
what, is this one episode? Or like?
There's loads. Yeah, there's a whole loads. It's great.
I want to subscribe to that after this.
It is really good. And they talk about the fact that, like you say, the German tanks were like incredibly engineered and beautiful, but they're impossible to repair, and they were too complicated to learn how to drive if you were just a farmer.
Yeah. It's like they had a bunch of MacBook Pros.
Yeah.
And the Allies had a bunch of like 300-pound Dells.
School Dells.
Yeah. It's like... Yeah, that's gross, but once something goes wrong, you can't fix a Mac.
Yeah, exactly.
They won't tell you what's in it.
If the Dell breaks, we don't even need to wait to fix it. We throw them a new Dell, and we leave the old Dell in a field. That's generally like the equivalent of what they did with Jeeps and stuff. They would just leave them.
Yeah.
Because they just had so much better... And I also recommend James Holland's book on D-Day, which I read with great suspicion, because I was like, I'm pretty sure all the D-Day has been D-Dayed by now.
I like the idea of your face reading. I like the idea of you reading something with suspicion. Your eyebrow raising. Just page to page.
Yeah.
Hmm.
My eyebrow was cramped after hours of reading in suspicion.
We'll see about this.
Yeah,
hmm.
We'll see, James Holland.
Licking the finger. Flick, flick.
But I thought all the D-Day had been D-Dayed by now.
Sure.
D-done. And I thought D-Day was D-done.
Yeah.
But I was D-wrong.
You were D-dumb.
I was D-dumb. D-dumb. And he's like nailed the statistics, James Holland.
Okay.
Like really, in terms of stuff like all the cars and the tanks and teaching people how to drive, he was saying like it's really important that in America it was like the rate of vehicle ownership was like 1 in 10, 1 in 15, like cars or tractors to people.
Mm-hmm.
So you had a 1 in 10 or 1 in 15 chance of knowing how to drive,
right?
Before you get conscripted,
yeah.
In Germany, it was 1 in 60,
right? Yeah, sure.
You were way more likely to be a man who knows how to ride a horse,
yeah,
and all this stuff, like all these interesting little factors that you would never think about, and it's very useful to read as well because it discounts a lot of that stuff about the German engineering being brilliant and the German uniforms being brilliant, because those myths in the war, and they are mostly myths, get used by Nazis and stuff. To be like, oh, see, no, that was brilliant.
Oh, no, now I'm part of the Nazi.
Now you're a Nazi, Phil. No. I've got you.
Propaganda machine.
No.
Rats.
No, but like the uniform.
Cancelled on my own podcast. I never have seen this coming.
By your own words, within an hour. The fastest cancellation.
But so what, the tanks weren't much better?
The tanks were really well engineered from a purely scientific point of view, but they broke more easily because the parts were more fine and harder to replace. And so then, okay, your tank's broken. You may as well not have a tank.
Mm-hmm.
It used too much fuel. It was too heavy. It was, you know, the uniforms are stylish, but they used too much material.
Okay. As in, and so some of them just had to be naked.
No. So as in, like each uniform for a German soldier with all its flaps.
It's the naked.
The naked SS regiment.
Naked regiment.
Like the Picts, fearful and blue.
Just running.
These guys are double crazy. No, but like, so if you have all a uniform with all like lovely flaps and tassels,
sure,
that takes twice as much material as a British uniform takes.
And it gets caught on the barbed wire.
Yeah, but we're talking about a country that has no imports.
Uh-huh.
So you're using up all the fucking wool.
Oh, okay.
So it's like, okay, we've clothed one guy for the cost of what the Russians are using to clothe 10.
Okay.
We're going to run out of money.
I see.
It's not just about, you know, if you have too many, you spend all your money on shiny buttons, then you've spent all your money on shiny buttons.
Yeah,
anyway.
Shiny buttons, though. Anyway, that's your...
Anyway, so shut up, Nazis. The uniforms did look nice, but that's not the point. They lost you the war.
But now we're part of history. Now we're part of...
Well, now we're free.
Now we're free, at last.
What's the first free thing you're going to do, Phil?
Well, I've already done a free thing. I started my tour on Sunday in Bristol. Beautiful town, Bristol. So great. I performed at the Bristol Old Vic.
Yeah,
I did two shows there, full of two wonderful audiences. And the Bristol Old Vic is a really lovely old theatre that's been refurbed recently, but it's the oldest working theatre in the UK.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe the world.
Full of ghosts?
Maybe, I don't know about the world, but maybe Europe.
Yeah, yeah.
It must have been full of ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
And I was on stage talking about it, and I mentioned how, you know, this is the oldest working theatre in the UK. I was just thinking, can you imagine the kind of racist-ass stuff that's been on this stage? It's unfathomable. Like, in the 1960s, let alone the 1700s.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And all the terrible dances and songs, all the most racist songs.
The blackface that's happened on this stage.
Wow, just to
can
think.
You imagine?
I'm in the very footsteps of...
It's Bristol, for God's sake!
I only found out the other day, you know the black and white minstrel show?
Yeah.
Just literally a black and white minstrel show. Like, on TV.
Oh, right.
Racist minstrels with painted faces going...
Yeah, I mean, that's how Lenny Henry started his career.
That was on TV.
He was on the black and white minstrel show, I think, and he looks back at it now like, oh my God, it's so horrible.
Yes, yes.
And at the time he says, you know, it was obviously, he knew it was bad, but he's just, you know, what else? That was entertainment.
And it was an offer, yeah.
Yeah.
Which I have total sympathy with. Because I want to be on television as well.
What would be your equivalent of the Black and White Minstrel Show, though?
Would you
just play a really horrible South African apartheid?
I was about to say, yeah. I would be offered the chance to be like the foil. They would say, oh, we'll have you back on the MASH report, but only if you can be presented as this kind of disgusting.
Gun-toting, like, khaki-wearing.
Like P.W. Buerta apologist. Just rambling on about separate but equal and how...
What would you call an
we don't want to mix our schools or whatever.
Everyone's like, ah, boo.
Yeah, boo, boo, egg him.
Yeah.
And then, like, I also have to sit and write all the zingers that undo my own arguments and, like, hand them over to Rachel Paris or whatever.
And you're not allowed to perform it knowingly.
You have to
perform it genuinely as if you believe it.
I have to get like really like surprised and frustrated when I'm being booed. I have to be like, what? No! I'm being made a fool of. I have to
like a panda villain.
You'll all see. I have to be really sincere. And I have to use my own full name.
And you come off stage and people are patting you on the back like, nice one, Pierre. That was hilarious. And you're like, oh yeah, thanks. Yeah, like, yeah.
Oh, thank you. Thanks. And then I say to my cruel and corrupt manager or whatever, you don't think they think that I think that, do you? No, kid, no, I'm sure it'll be fine. Like, oh, but it's just that I've got to... Yeah, don't worry about it.
Put on this hood before you go out to get in the car.
They'll read the news tomorrow. Yeah, maybe that would be it, if I had to be a foil.
What do you call an apartheidist?
Well, it was the National Party that did it. So you like they used to call the... supporters of the National Party, you call them Nats.
Nats.
Yeah. Which is pretty close to Nazi.
It is.
The Nats, the Nationalists.
Okay.
Because it's the National Party, whenever I see on the news, it's like, the Scottish National Party, a little part of me goes, ugh.
Yeah, I never get a good vibe when Nationals in the name of anything.
It's like the more...
Except The National, which is a good band.
Yeah, but even then,
who knows?
An Edge of Fear. It's like when a country is like the Free People's Democratic Republic, and you go, oh, it's none of those, is
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah,
oh,
yeah.
No. You've had to say it four times in the name.
The Democratic People's National Republic of goodness and nice food enough food and lots of electricity. Why have they had to say all that?
That seems like they're really over-egging the pudding, because they don't have any eggs or pudding.
Yeah, like if you went to a country that's called the running water country. Like, the first thing I know about this place is there'll be no running water.
The only MRSA free country. You go, hang on.
Oh, I've been coughing on stage. It's been hilarious.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Is this a deliberate comedic timing strategy or are you just ill?
Oh, no, it's just...
Are you aiming to be like, is that coughing guy? Like a 30s turn?
Well, no, because currently, if you look like me and you go around coughing, people get quite scared.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Coronavirus.
Coronavirus. The good time beer virus.
The good time.
Coronavirus is the only virus you can put a wedge of lemon in.
Pop a bit of lime in your mouth. Keep the flies away from your coronavirus. Why don't they call it the Wuhan flu?
The flu hand?
The flu hand.
The Wuhan flu. That does sound cooler, doesn't it?
Yeah. So you've been pretending to have coronavirus on stage.
Yeah, it's been great.
Have you been coughing? Just you should cough without covering your mouth onto the front row. I was amazed and surprised for 0.01 seconds about all the racist coronavirus shit, and then I immediately remembered what people and racists are like, and I went, oh, of course, yes.
Yeah, I saw that thing on the BBC about how...
Yeah.
Well, yeah. That's so old. That's an old-fashioned racism, though, to hate people because they are diseased.
Yes, and also...
they have the plague.
And also because thing in the news...
Mm.
I take that and apply it to guy down the road. That's old school.
But then part of me is like, well, at least people are engaging with the news. Honestly, part of me thinks like, well, at least people are...
No, it's because it's in the Sun.
Right.
Wuhan, flu hand, gonna...
gonna get you, Han.
Gonna get you, Han. See, we could all work there. And many Oxbridge graduates do.
Yeah, we went to the same university as those people.
Yeah, we did. So, okay, but you don't have coronavirus.
Not that I know of.
No, me neither. No. Not to boast or anything.
Yeah, but apparently it can take a while for the symptoms to emerge, and you are infected. You are contagious
when
before
you're asymptomatic.
When you're asymptomatic, yes.
Oh my word!
But it's nothing to worry about.
Please try and listen to this Bud Pod with gloves on, listeners. put a little condom over your headphone before you put it in your ear.
Put those those mouth guards of one over each ear.
Yes. And please...
So their ears look like they're from Hong Kong. They're doing a smog or something.
Yeah, please sandwich wrap your iPhone or laptop.
Ring, ring. Letters, emails, phone calls, correspondence.
Mini correspondence, I'd say.
A quick correspondence.
A quick burst. You're desperate for a correspondence. You turn off the highway, you run into the services, and you have a quick correspondence.
It's like an espresso, how they have it on the continent. Just on the bar, one shot of espresso, and you're out.
Back to the construction site.
Back to the pizza factory.
Quite right. It's from no one. It's from anonymous. And the subject line is, penis peer, okay, thank you.
Okay, penis peer.
Yeah.
And this is a fresh one? This is a fresh email.
This is a very fresh email. Okay. We're actually doing it out of order, because I was charmed by...
The preview
of the email, where the opening just says, "Dear piss and shit."
And what time does this email come in?
Just after midnight. Dear piss and shit.
Yeah, you have an idea of what this guy's night was.
Yeah, what I like about it is that this guy's emailing saying that, like, he's heard the other sort of little puns and twists, and we've got to the point now where we're just being called piss and shit.
I wonder which one's which. What do you reckon? How can I'm pissing your shit?
Can we do that as a kind of 70s, 80s British double act? Like, good morning, everyone. We are piss and shit. And be like, I'm William Piss and I'm Jonathan Shit. And together we are piss and shit. Who likes magic tricks?
Yeah.
Boo, no. Dear piss and shit. I'll make it brief, as I'm tired and this story isn't worth that much time.
I imagine coming back late at night and going, oh, I guess I'll just send that email. What do I call him? Piss and shit.
Dear piss and shit. Right, before I go to bed, what have I got to do? Brush my teeth and email BudPod. And the story isn't worth that much time. I was recently lucky enough to find myself in my school's second worst quality toilets. E block.
Oh, is he at school? Is he still a student?
I think so.
Oh, nice.
E block, he says.
E block, God.
I was relishing a well-needed waz.
Okay.
As we've all done in our lives.
We all need a waz.
When a sixth former walked in, a feature of E block toilets that is essential to my tale is that there are two urinals with no partition.
Okay, very
good. They just bang right next to each other.
Yeah, they right.
Anyways, the sixth former walked up to the only other urinal and began to piss, and then peered over until his head was about a foot away from my dong.
Like he bent down?
Peering over, yeah, peered over until his head was about a foot away from my dong, in the same manner I imagine Woodhouse's Jeeves would peer at a disreputable willy. So there's a very sort of arch tone coming from this man's perving.
Also, this guy, for a student, has got a very old-fashioned sensibilities.
I like to think that Anonymous here is the same kind of fun, cool rock and roll guy that he's also read all of Jeeves and Wodehouse as I had done at school because I'm a cool, fun guy. I exclaimed a quick, okay, thank you, and shuffled away to the nearest cubicle, knob in hand.
Lovely.
Keep it jacked. Anon.
Anon. Wow. Well, thanks, Anon.
Dear piss and shit.
Best days of your life.
Best days of your life. Do report that man. do report that sixth former if he continues to peer at your disreputable willy.
Especially if he's a foot away from it, because that means he's not just leant over and looking down, because that's still, on average, 3 feet.
Yeah.
If he's like then bent down, so his head's basically in the porcelain by your penis.
He's really looking at
he's
it.
He's really getting a good old look there.
Next time it happens, just give it a flick of the wrist, splash some piss right up in his face. And then run like the devil.
I'm at sixth form in my school, I was out in the corridor, and one of the bigger boys just ran over to me, his penis just in his hand.
I remember this
and
story.
And I looked down and saw his penis, and he looked me in the eye and just went, "Now I'm Phil Wang." Which I still don't entirely understand.
I remember you told me that story at university, and I laughed so much at the patheticness of it.
Yeah.
The fact it doesn't make any sense. His confidence and at being able to recognize exactly that kind of guy from school.
Yeah.
Where it's like you're so close to making sense. But yeah. You never will. You're stuck like this.
I hope he is going through some personal difficulties now in his life. I hope things
now
are going
I'm well. Phil Wang.
Yeah. But it was said in quite a nasty way, so I hope he's doing badly.
Oh,
he probably
right.
is.
He said in a mean way.
Yeah, I mean, we weren't friends.
No. Yeah. That's coming across.
Yeah.
That part of the story is very clear.
Oh, also, just quick shout out to a pod bud who was at one of my shows in Bristol on the weekend.
Yeah.
I mentioned the podcast, just podcast in general, and she shouted, "Koji!"
Yes.
Which is nice, but difficult to explain to everyone else in the room.
Yes. Yes, you and I on stage are stuck with the whole bin bags, bum bum life problem of the secret greeting saga. If you remember when we tried to come up with a secret greeting that doesn't make you sound like an absolute pervert.
I think it just is Koji now.
It's just Koji now, I think, yeah.
Yeah. Which is hard, makes it harder to explain to everyone because in the end they have to say, which stands for keep on jacking it, which means what it means.
Yeah, it's about wanking.
Yeah.
Our podcast is trying to promote masturbation.
Healthy masturbation.
I mentioned that I do a podcast with you at a gig the other day.
Yeah.
And a lady in the audience who was, you know, East Asian, if not actually Chinese, immediately
Asian,
went,
if not Chinese,
went,
really?
Yeah. And I went, are you a listener? And she went, no, but I love Phil Wang. So I'm going to, and she got her phone out like
just put on headphones, just walked out the room.
I can't wait. but it was quite a big audience. It was like an audience of like 150, 200 people. And I do a podcast with this guy called Phil Wang. And I look and it's just like the only Asian lady.
Like you said, the activation code.
Yeah. Now she's going to go kill the Malaysian Prime Minister like from Zoolander. All right, that's episode 48.
48, everyone. 40.
48.
How we've only just noticed 40.
It's pathetic. It's we're almost done. And
almost
it's,
done.
And
we're
right too busy being distracted by how free we are.
Yeah.
Enjoy your... I can't remember if the bananas are supposed to be straight or bendy.
Yeah. They're supposed to be bendy. So now their bananas can be bendy again.
Okay, yeah. Enjoy the curvy nanas, everyone.
Bye!
Bye!
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.